You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, we're back in the studios. Good morning.
It's the first time back in the studios for months. It feels like somebody cleaned in here. It looks very looks very refreshed. I see Clorox, disinfectant wipes, and spray and all of that. So I'm happy to be back in the studio with you.
I am happy you're back, too.
You know, it's COVID 24/7 pretty much everywhere, and everybody's paying attention. We've had over 200,000 die. But there are some other unanticipated consequences here in Montana as a result of COVID. Some of them, you know, good for people that are selling homes, for example, but not so right. good for people looking to buy homes. In both Missoula and Bozeman, the last month's statistics show that the average realty price of a home sale was up 21%.
Wow.
Which is a lot of money. In Bozeman, that meant $88,000 on average the home prices have increased as a result of people fleeing from the big cities and looking at Montana as a place to refuge.
Incredible. We always said we were ahead of the curve.
we're going to have to find someplace else. I'm not sure where. Alaska, Canada won't let us in. But it's happening. We're getting a film studio in Missoula.
Right near where we live.
Right near where we live. They're putting in a multi-million dollar huge film studio, partially, I think, as a result of shows like Tombstone filming in Montana, needing right. facilities.
Right, 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 right.
I mean, that has been a
Yellowstone,
big,
Yellowstone.
Excuse me, Yellowstone.
No, but they may, but you know what? Well, Arnie, I heard that there's a new airline coming in. I just read about it.
Yeah.
Flying from Montana to Calgary.
Yep, that'd be the first international flight we would
and
have.
And that's the only way you can get into Canada right now. It's a good flight.
That would be a great flight. Yeah, I would say, actually, Kevin Costner was in Wyatt Earp, which was the competitor to Tombstone. But Yellowstone has, they moved here to film
yes.
the complete show.
Yes.
It means millions of dollars of economic vitality for the community.
Right.
And one of the consequences may be, a very good future for the restaurant industry. And on that topic, we have Raz.
From Second Set, Raz Schneider.
Raz Schneider coming to visit us today to talk about what the roller coaster of the restaurant industry has been like over these last 7-8 months.
And how COVID has affected their business.
Yeah, and how it affected their business.
They just celebrated their first anniversary August 8th, right? Yeah.
What a time to open a new restaurant.
What a time to open a new restaurant. You and I are big fans. And after this break, we are going to be back with owner, proprietor, restaurateur, Raz Schneider. Back after this.
This is an important...
Hi, Cap. Elmo wants to know, what is the census?
Ah, the census is a special time when we count every single person in the country.
Do kids and babies count, too?
Of course. Counting everyone in your home helps support your neighborhood by funding schools, hospitals, and more. So complete the census by calling, going online, or returning your form by mail. It's totally private.
Visit 2020census.gov and...
Make your family! Count.
Brought to you by Carnegie Corporation of New York and the Ad Council.
And we are back with Raz Schneider from Second Set Bistro. Arnie.
Raz, how you been? How you feeling? How are things going?
Arnie, I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I'm doing good. What's the restaurant roller coaster been like over these last 7 months?
Absolute roller coaster.
In both places, not only in Missoula, but your place in Cook City?
Yeah, well, two different sets of circumstances.
Right.
So Cook City... you're dependent on Yellowstone Park for your business. The tricky part of maneuvering the summer in Cook City is you're in a small tourist town, southwestern Montana. The proximity into which, the folks that live around there believe in their freedoms. So part of those freedoms in which they believe was not wearing masks. So it was a constant battle for this group of people trying to keep themselves safe and our customers safe. The mask issue every day, and it became very...
Do those people believe do they not wear seat belts either? Or, do they follow, do they just do what they want?
They're like a Nike commercial, man. They just do it. But they...
Drink while they drive, no seat belts, no masks.
Right, shoot guns.
Shoot guns.
That's their right? And so that's how they live their lives, and that's what they believe. But as far as our business goes, that's not how we wanted to operate, nor... were the people, the outsiders, the tourists, It made for a very uncomfortable situation.
Sure.
And it made for a mentally taxing few months for the people up there. The other part, too, which was difficult, is they were very short-staffed, and I think this was the case for a lot of the border towns around national parks this summer. You depend on those J-1 visa workers
right.
from foreign countries, and they just didn't have them. So we were working with a staff of 8 people. It usually takes about 25 to staff the place to run full-time in the summer. And so they've done a remarkable job. I'm proud of them, but they're tired. They're exhausted.
Oh, I'm sure. It was one of the things I used to look forward to, going to the national parks in the summer to see the name tags with the countries that right. all of the right. you know, summer workers came from. It was an element that
right.
that was a persistent element, and you know you just got used to seeing who was going to wait on me, somebody from Austria, somebody from Croatia, you know, and that, well, obviously that's gone.
Socially too, I mean, it's like when you were in school, who's going to be the new kids in your class this
right.
year, right?
Yeah.
And so they just didn't have that influx of people this summer, so it made it was a tough task for them. Now here in Missoula, what we saw at Second Set, Missoula did a wonderful job early in the pandemic. None of us really knew what to expect, so in March when we got shut down, we just didn't know. We thought we'll quarantine for 2 weeks and it'll all go away, and we'll pay our penance now, and we'll get done with this early and we'll be okay. And we didn't know if we could cook food, if it was transmitted through preparation of food. We just didn't. Nobody knew, right? So you go into this great unknown, and we saw how Missoula reacted, being downtown, and it was people were on it. People were careful. People were distancing. You'd go into spots, and people were wearing masks without having to be told to wear masks. I would travel to other places in the state, and it wasn't that way. And so it felt really comfortable here as far as, like, you could see people were engaged. And it gave us comfort to get restarted again. And we saw a lot more local people early in the summer, in May and April. Or I guess May 11th is when we reopened, the week after Mother's Day, for in-house service. And we started to see the flow of local people, our regular customers. And then around, like, July 4th for us, it was a noticeable just end to that. And I feel like the tourists came. And for us, we're about, like, 90% first-time customers right now. We're not
really?
Seeing, we're
That's
not
great.
Seeing any – well, it is and it isn't.
They
right,
leave.
Right, right.
We Second Set is, like, prided itself for when we designed this restaurant. The idea was we were going to be a community restaurant. And we wanted to be a place that locals felt comfortable coming.
Right.
We wanted our brand to be a local brand. And so it's important to us that locals feel comfortable coming there, that it's a spot that they want to go to. And we appreciate any business that we get. We appreciate the people that have come through this summer and have eaten with us. But 90% is a problem because
right,
it's not
right.
a way to build a downtown business as far as, like, sustainability.
Right. Sure. You need locals.
We need locals.
So what's it like with, you know, 90%? You know, new business.
Well, it can be exciting. You get people coming from out of state that haven't been, you know, maybe to Missoula or to Montana, and they eat at Second Set, and it blows them away. They didn't, you know, they don't expect something like that in Missoula.
Right.
We get a lot of people from bigger cities, Seattle, San Francisco, a lot of people from Chicago and Denver.
Have you been asking people where they're from?
So we ask everybody.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we try to get as much information from everybody as we can. It kind of helps with the overall experience. You know, the
sure,
more information
right.
we have, the more personable we can make it. And so it just kind of happens in small talk. And people tell us, you know, oh, we're from Denver and we've been on vacation. We haven't had a meal like this in a month being
right.
on the road. This reminds us of a place that we would eat in downtown Chicago or New York.
Right. Well, that's cool.
So we get that all the time, which is nice. It's reaffirming that we're doing something right.
Have you had supply chain interruptions?
Yeah, we yeah. certainly have.
So has that changed your menu?
Well, our menu changed a lot. Coming out of COVID here in Missoula and in Cook City, it changed. But we thought that the trend for the restaurants out of COVID would be much more pushed towards to-go and pick-up food.
Right.
And I think for a lot of places, that's been true. For us, that didn't really happen. But so when we conceptualized our menu reopening after COVID, we thought that we would have to make dishes that translated well to-go as well as to in-house dining. So that was a challenge. How do we make stuff that's going to be delicious, you know, sitting in the DoorDash guy's car for 10 minutes?
Right.
but just as exciting when you're coming in-house to eat, right? So,
fried chicken.
Fried chicken on Mondays, yeah. That always
which
works.
I have yet to taste, and I'm bemoaning the fact
yeah.
that I have.
Yeah, you're failing at life. Scott.
I am failing yeah. completely at life, as yeah. you know. Right. And that's our his right. place is our favorite place in town.
Yeah, it is.
Bar none.
And I haven't gone, which I have to say, I'm sorry, but I have to say the good part of it is I stopped going to restaurants because I decided I was a little nervous about because it was an unknown. You were the first restaurant I went to
sure.
After the COVID pandemic started, and then I realized I'm not comfortable in those environments, and so I went on a low carb diet, and so as a result of COVID, I've lost 20 pounds.
You look great, by the way.
Very, yeah, he does look
I've
great.
I've lost 20 pounds.
Very sexy.
I will be
and
going
golfing
back.
Like a maniac.
I will be going back to make up for that 20 pounds pretty soon.
I agree with you. I'm not as comfortable going into a bigger
group.
Well,
if you read that, a lot of the transmission happens at restaurants, particularly in places that are not like Missoula, where I've seen pictures taken by my friends where as soon as they walk in the door, everybody takes the masks off and they're not separating tables, and my nieces and nephews are in places that are packed to the gills.
So for us, like we have sacrificed a large amount of income to socially distance in our front dining room. We've also added seating outside that kind of limited our inside dining, but that's okay. We just want people to feel safe when they come in and eat. So I feel proud of that we have accomplished that. It has come at a price though. But people's safety and them feeling comfortable, you can't.
Right. What have you done? Have you run into situations where people won't in Missoula?
No.
Where they don't want to wear a mask?
No, everybody's been great in Missoula.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. I mean, it hasn't been an issue at all. We haven't had anybody complain about it. Actually, people eating outside have felt uncomfortable just with people not wearing masks, just kind of passing by.
Yeah.
We can't control that.
No,
it's people in Missoula have been wonderful. It's been outstanding.
Unfortunately, COVID is COVID, but this place is actually handling it well.
Well, if you have a population that has some intellect,
right?
I was in Walla Walla, which is completely dependent on the wine industry and tourism, and everybody. I mean, if you want to do wine tasting, you have to make an appointment. They set it up outside. They only take a limited number of people. Mm-hmm. Every restaurant was serving outdoors. They waived some ordinances to allow every restaurant to put tables out on the streets.
Right.
And they minimized the number of people. I didn't see one employee anywhere that wasn't wearing a mask.
So what you find, I'd say a dozen times a week, I feel like we talk to people that say this is the first time they've been out since March, right?
Yeah.
So it's important to us that they feel comfortable. I mean,
right.
it's a
right.
big step. If it's been that long since you've gone out, you've had some anxiety about going out.
Yep.
So it's our job as well as to make you feel comfortable in our space. And so I think we've accomplished that.
The staff
is incredible. The staff, I mean, when you are working with unknowns, it's very difficult on your staff because we all want to have like a regiment. Like it helps the restaurant. We think in those terms. And everything changes so much.
Right. Well, the other factor to all of this, even though people are coming out more, you know, there's been 200,000 people that have died, which means everybody knows someone. One of the first persons that died from COVID was a friend of Scott.
Right. Hal Wilner.
Hal Wilner. Yeah. A woman that I talk to on a regular basis who is an executive assistant to one of my best friends. She got sick. She was 54 years old. Great health, great shape. She died. She got sick on a Friday and died on a Monday. So if you know those experiences, you know, it'd be insane for you to just thrust yourself out there and try to expose yourself or not try to protect yourself.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, and so, I mean, all that you take all that into consideration, right? And so the staff has to deal with that. People that are anxious, people that are a little bit gun-shy, people that maybe, you know, are just, they're a little bit more on edge, and to get them to settle down and to have a good time and to be in the moment is a tough task
yeah,
for them.
So people pay attention. I went early on, we did go to try to take takeout to bring home, and I walked in, I placed the order. I walked in and looked in the kitchen, and no one was wearing a mask. I walked out.
Yeah.
Wearing a mask and sanitizing is not that big a deal
it's
all said and done. You might have a personal principle about it, but you have to keep your restaurant clean to begin with, or else you don't meet sanitation requirements, and they have inspections on that sort of thing. Putting a mask on is not big a deal.
I would say that, you know, 90% of the restaurants that I've been to in Missoula, people are professionals. They hold themselves to standards. Nobody wants to get anybody sick. Nobody wants to get sick.
Right.
We make mistakes, definitely. Like sometimes, you know, people forget to flip their mask up. You know, it happens.
Or somebody gets, I mean, just at the mustard seed, somebody just got sick, one of the employees, they shut down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what the ramifications of it are.
I think that that's going to be something that, sadly, every restaurant in this town is probably going to have to deal with at some point or the another. Like, and I hope that people out there listening, you know, these restaurants, you don't take them to task for that. It's like I said, I think most places are doing the right thing.
Well, you can't quarantine all your employees.
No, and I think it's just, you know, people... are going, it's just the,
you're not the NBA.
There's no bubble.
It's the nature of the virus, right? And it's just, I think each restaurant, like at some point until we can get this under wraps, is probably going to have to deal with that in some way.
Let's do a quick ID. Our guest is Raz Schneider. He is the owner, proprietor, and partner of Second Set Bistro over on the old Florence building. Right? That's the old...
Yeah, downtown Higgins, man. Downtown? 111 North Higgins.
Oh, North Higgins, that's right. Raz, for our audience that's not familiar...
You don't even know where it is, Scott, do you?
I just... They just
we don't know addresses here. We can find it. We just go.
We gotta go there, man. But for our audience who is not familiar with you, give us a little background. Furnish us with your background and kind of what brought you to Missoula.
Yeah, Cook City, Montana. It's just a tiny little... National Park border town, 4 miles northeast of Yellowstone. There's about 100 people, no police, one-room schoolhouse, and I own the saloon there, the Miner Saloon, which is an iconic destination spot in southwest Montana for people. I'd lived there for 25 years before moving to Missoula with my wife, Maddie, and buying the old Redbird space in the Florence. And so we've been here about a year. We love Missoula. We're excited to be here, be a part of the community here. But Cook City was a wonderful place to grow up for someone in their early 20s,
right?
Early 30s. It's a kind of a retirement community for people that age. You can hike, you can ski, you can fish, you can drink a lot if that's what you choose. The only thing they ask you is just to be on time and your word's your word. So it's a nice place to learn how to maneuver life, really, like if you take advantage of it. And I learned a lot there, certainly. Learned a lot about Montana, learned a lot about myself and my capabilities and my limitations, and so here we are.
And you met a good group of people down there, right, that you kind of brought with you, or not just from there, but in all of your travels, right,
to
Second Set.
Yes. So our other partner, Josh, we actually went to the same high school in Ontario, California, and he graduated a couple years before I did. And we all kind of knew each other from down there, but we were different ages.
Right.
We all ended up falling around the Grateful Dead at some point in like the early 90s and just kind of came together. These guys had gone to Yellowstone in 1992.
Yeah.
And they had come back and said, this is place Cook City is a place you got to be. It's insane. It's crazy. Right. We can get bar tabs. We can hike. We can meet girls. We can do all this stuff. I said, I'm in, but I'm in a punk rock band. I can't go anywhere. We're about to make a record. Get out of the punk rock band and come to Cook City. I said, I'm not getting out of the punk rock band. That's how I get girls.
What was the name of the punk rock band?
Dead Butter.
Dead Butter.
Dead Butter. Dead Butter.
That's right. Yeah. And so we were...
Even then, there was a food theme to you.
Yeah, right. So we, in our own minds, we were on the verge of making it big. We were about to cut an album, and we played with some bands that were... are fairly big now. I got kicked out of the band. And so it gave me license to kind of travel around that fall with the Grateful Dead and then hitchhike to Cook City that next summer, in the summer of 94.
By the way, I think getting kicked out of a punk rock band is really a badge of honor.
That's right.
There's no question about it. If you think about all the great people that have been kicked out of bands.
Right.
Richard Hell was kicked out of television.
Raz was kicked out of Dead Butter.
Dead Butter, yeah. Right.
No, it was a thing. We made a promise that we wouldn't practice.
Right.
And so,
yeah, well, because why stunt the creativity?
Was this in the LA punk scene?
Something, yeah, like Inland Empire punk scene. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Well, were you part of the film, The End of Civilization?
No. But we did play with
the decline of Western Civilization.
I can drop some names, but I'm not going to name drop now. But
we love name drop.
Yeah. We played with some bands that made it pretty big, and we were kind of on that path, that trajectory.
So, coming to Cook City, trying to follow the Grateful Dead. You really only had 2 years to follow the Grateful Dead at that point.
Yeah, so I followed them from like 92 to 94.
Okay.
Yeah,
And how many times did you see them?
70 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's not just that's 70 times. It's a dead end.
I have to ask you this. Yeah. I've never seen anything 70 times.
Right.
except reruns of Seinfeld,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So the 68th time you saw them, what was the feeling at that point?
It was greater than the first time that I saw them. So the Grateful Dead, you grow with them and you learn to appreciate that music more and more. You hear it differently each time that you go.
And do they play it differently each time that
you go? They play it differently
every time. Oh, my God, yes. Yeah.
And so that's the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And so with Second Set, that was the energy that we wanted to bring to our food. Was it's not going to be the same every time. It's going to maybe scare you a little bit, but if you can make it through that unknown, you get the big hug afterwards. And so that's the great thing about improvisational music, is it can be challenging sometimes,
sure.
And it can be a little bit frightening maybe. It's not pleasant, right? But
right.
If you can make it through, I don't want to say our food's not pleasant, but the idea is that if you can maneuver that space and you get through it, it's always the big reward at the end. And so that is kind of how we approach our cooking and our concept of building flavors, right? Want to challenge you. We want to maybe make you a little bit uncomfortable in the sense that I've never tried that. Maybe that's an ingredient that's a little bit different, that I haven't heard of or tried. And then once you trust us and you've tried it, you may not like it, right? That's okay.
Right.
But it's going to offer something. It's going to give you a reward.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what Second Set is all about.
You're delighted.
Yeah.
I have a great story of when I brought Christy Loeffler into Second Set. And
Halloween.
Yeah. Halloween. And Raz created a...
Folly Pop.
A Folly Pop. Tell everybody, for our audience, what is a Folly Pop?
So before COVID, we would do a pre-dinner snack and an after-dinner treat. And so it could, just be, we did chicharrones to start the meal. Afterwards, we'd give you a truffle. It was a shared something, and we thought after COVID, it probably wasn't smart for everybody to be sticking their fingers into the same basket. So we stopped doing that. But for Halloween, we wanted to do a trick or treat, right? We wanted to make something that would trick your senses as the opener. So what we did, and this is a riff, they've been doing this in Chicago for a while, and I've always wanted to do it, but never had the courage. We took chicken liver mousse, and we rolled it in Pop Rocks.
Ah.
Yeah, right? And so in Chicago, they call it the Folly Pop. They use foie gras. We made a chicken liver mousse. And so you look at this thing, and it looks like a lollipop, right?
Right.
And then you eat it, and you get the pops from the Pop Rocks,
right.
And then the richness, the unctuousness of the chicken liver mousse, right?
Right.
And it actually plays really well together because you have the acidity and the fruitiness of the Pop Rock.
Yeah.
And texturally, it just kind of, it screws with your mind a little bit because it's popping in your face. And then you have the richness of the chicken liver mousse, right? And so we were excited about it, and it bummed some people out for
sure. Right, because they wanted something sweet, right?
Right, well, Christy Loeffler was one of them, and she...
Fan of Second Set.
But
she didn't like that.
She doesn't like liver.
Right, she doesn't like liver.
Yeah, well, I understand that. Some people don't like liver. I like it.
Yeah.
She didn't grow up with it like we did.
Exactly. And so her response to it was the antithesis of what we had planned.
Hope for.
Yeah, but actually it was perfect.
It was exactly perfect.
My favorite after-dinner amuse is at the restaurant at MoMA.
Oh, really?
And what they would come afterwards, they would bring out a metal tray that was little circular perforations, and every one of those perforations had a different ice cream cone.
Yes.
Little mini ice cream cones, and they were all the color of the rainbow, and they bring it out and let you pick one. And it was just like, which one, you're going to go for the traditional
chocolate?
It's
almost like the chocolate box, right?
Yeah. You just pick the one that you want, and it was always fun to look forward to, the little mini ice cream pops at the end. At the Jules Verne restaurant in the Eiffel Tower.
I've been there.
After you eat and they give you dessert, they bring out homemade marshmallows and a chocolate fountain.
Oh, cool.
And you're dipping in bittersweet chocolate your marshmallows before you walk out the door. So those kinds of things make you remember. I mean, I haven't been there in years, but I remember what we had. And your sort of approach to it makes people look forward to, what am I going to get before? What am I going to get after? What's this experience
going
to be like?
What am I getting?
It was awesome.
Sometimes, as you say, it doesn't work. I went to a restaurant in Spain where they had gelatinous balls in a broth, and each one was filled with something.
Right.
And when you bit into it, a couple of them tasted fantastic. A couple of them were, what the heck is this?
As chefs, you really think in terms of textures,
right?
You know, acidity, obviously, salt, heat, all the things, temperatures, and sometimes it gets hard to edit yourself, right?
Yes,
because you get this idea, and maybe it's not quite what your idea was,
right?
Or maybe the eye just didn't work. But the challenge of trying to figure that out is what makes food exciting.
Well, right? I think I might have told you the most over the top experience. I went to Nirasawa's in Tokyo, which was the number one. It is the number one rated restaurant in Asia,
mm-hmm.
And their signature opening is a plank, wooden plank, with an edible Japanese village.
Right.
So the house is made
Godzilla.
Out of the roof is made out of yogurt with I think it was crushed olives and kale. I mean, it was just to top that, they had speakers in the plank.
Yeah.
And they had staff in real time live in the woods recording the sounds of birds and wind and trees rustling and all that was coming out of this plank. The food wasn't memorable.
It's experiential.
In a sense, but the experience, you're never going to forget eating a village.
Talk about that.
Well, just real quick, you asked me a question earlier about our supply chain.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to like segue into this about what we're doing now.
Right.
Because I'm very proud of it. And what that forced us to do was even search out food more locally than we had. So we were hyper-local to begin with. But now, I would say...
Now you're breaking into people's homes and stealing their peanut butter.
That's right.
Farmer's market.
Very local.
Very local. Yeah, peanut butter burglar, that's me. And it was the right thing to do, you know, from a social aspect, too, is these farmers here, everybody's hurting, right?
Right.
So we're supporting each other, but it forced us to search more local for a lot of the stuff that we didn't have access to maybe our first summer. We just didn't have those relationships.
Sure.
Right? And it takes time to forge those relationships. Trust people and meet these folks. You know, this isn't that far out there for some people. It kind of is, and we've been getting this incredible produce the last month. I don't know if you guys are all familiar with Benson's Farm. I want to throw them a shout.
Yeah.
So their corn, it's the best corn I've ever eaten in my life this summer. It's
so you're doing the Mexican corn with it? The Mexican street corn?
We're doing all sorts of stuff with that corn.
Good. Are you? Corn is like a find, right?
Yeah, and so we got this corn 2 weeks ago, and we were eating. I'm like bringing a tear to my eye. I'm not like it was so delicious.
You didn't have to put anything on it, right? No salt, you could just no butter, you could just eat it plain.
No, but I wanted to serve it raw.
Yeah.
Right?
Raw. Yeah, because that's how good it was.
Right, and so... I know, like, my job isn't to, like, go out and talk to every table and give them a speech about, like, how righteous raw corn is, right? But I felt in that moment that, like, I needed to do that.
Yeah, of course.
And so I went out to tables, and I had my apron on, and I would bring this corn out and just kind of feel people out and say, like, I really think that you should try this. And some people were like, nah, like, it's raw. No, not into it. And then some people were really receptive to it. And the people that were receptive to it, like, the looks on their faces when they – bit into this corn, it was like the Blues Brothers moment when Jake and Elwood are doing the flips down the church when James Brown's singing, right? Like that was the moment that they had in our restaurant, right? Off this corn from this guy that's been growing it here for 40, 50 years, who loves his craft, who is passionate about it.
Yes.
And it just, in that moment, it doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
And so like right now we're running a peach dessert and it's just a raw peach. There's nothing that I can do to that peach that's going to make that peach better. There's a little vanilla creme anglaise and some almonds. And that's it, right? Like, we just took the pit out of the peach, and here it is on the plate. And, like, that, some would argue that's not cooking, but, like, to me, like, that is the essence of, like, what we do. Is, like, we're taking these ingredients that we have locally, and we're giving them to you. That's the best they're going to get. So, like,
right. Cooking doesn't mean you have to heat it.
The only thing I'm going to do is ruin it. Is ruin it at that point.
So what's an interesting parallel is to performance, to music performance, where as an artist performing in front of an audience, they're feeding off of that audience and their reaction. And if you have a better audience, traditionally you give a better performance, a more energized, uplifting performance. It's the same thing with serving food, isn't it?
Yeah, like I would think so. So one thing that COVID has done for me personally,
yes,
I think for our restaurant too, is it allowed us to pivot to a more playful, fun, sort of presentation of our food, right? Like it allowed us to be ourselves. Like we're not sugarcoating it. Like we're in a tough spot, and a lot of restaurants are in a tough spot. You know, let's be ourselves.
Sure,
let's cook the food that we want to cook.
Right,
let's be who we are. Right,
right. Like, well, I think a better music analogy is that people are used to, what, you know, like listening to recordings or seeing their artist the way they've always seen them.
Right.
So when someone goes from full orchestration to a cappella, it sometimes upsets people. Or the biggest example of it was when Bob Dylan went, you know, electric, and people were just going nuts.
Right.
And you would say, what do you mean nuts? This is a cool, you know, he's with the band, he's going, I mean, it's really, it's a change of pace, just like what you were talking about with the Dead. You're experimenting in the same way, and the people that don't get it either have to be brought along, or, you know, they're better off going to some place where they know they're going to have, you know, a McDonald's burger and it's always the same.
There's a lot of restaurants in Missoula that are wonderful restaurants that everybody can find what they need.
Right.
We're trying to fill that void of what we think people may really enjoy here. And it's a little bit different. It's different.
I think what's going to help is the fact that we have, you know, a movie studio going in. We have the Yellowstone people here. We have all these coastal people and big city people that are looking now at Missoula and Bozeman as their new homes, and they're used to a different, you know, restaurant experience, and they're looking, you know, that's more aligned with what you offer than somebody who's had the same menu for 15 years.
Yeah, so right now we're changing. I mean, the menu's changing almost every day right now. I mean, the stuff that you would see online is the core of the menu right now. All that stuff's going to change here in like a week. So we have a tomato and corn salad. It's my favorite bite on the menu right now because it's really summer on a plate. Well, summer's come to an end now.
Right.
So I can only get the good corn for another 2 weeks, maybe.
Now you can add pumpkin to the menu.
We could have, yeah. No, but I mean, so that's how we're thinking, right? Like, we can't just keep tomato and corn on the menu.
But you can keep pork millonniers on the menu.
That's never going away.
So can I talk about that for a second?
Yes.
You can talk. Well, just a quick idea. Our guest is Rash Schneider, owner and partner of Second Set Bistro. Talk about the pork millonniers.
So that is the first dish that we conceptualized at Second Set.
Right.
When we were doing recipe and development. We were in Austin, Texas, and we were planning a pop-up at the time for a group of people that we wanted to be investors at the time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We had this great menu planned out. We thought that we were going to be able to cater a reception at the Florence building in May when Thomas Taylor, the new owner of the building, had done some renovation in the lobby. We had signed the lease. It was kind of a secret at that point, but we were going to be the new restaurant. It was going to be a good opportunity to be like, here's Second Set. It didn't work out. You know, we couldn't get insurance, blah, blah, blah. But we started conceptualizing these dishes, and we had these old menus from the Florence Hotel. Actually, it started with old train menus. Like, we figured out the train routes that used to come through San Francisco, Seattle, to Missoula, and then east.
Right.
And we found that train, and then we saw the menus, and they were really beautiful, posh menus.
Yeah.
Well, I got a hold of Thomas Taylor. I told him this idea for this party, that we were investigating these menus, doing some study, that we wanted to make a modern version of these train menus. And not like 2 hours later, he sent me original menus from the Florence building.
Wow.
And so I still have them.
Awesome.
And so we still do these dishes. So we'll go find a dish from one of the restaurants at the Florence that we have from back in the 40s and modernize it.
Right.
Food's all about stories. Like, if you have something to relate with, people kind of feel that. And it just, again, like, it makes it more genuine, I think, like when there's a story behind it.
Right.
So on the original menus, they had a veal mayonnaise all the way through, right? And so at the time, our head chef, Tom, he had been to Italy a lot, and he'd eaten vitello tonnato, which is the veal mayonnaise, pounded veal, breaded and fried mayonnaise, for those of you who aren't familiar, with tonnato sauce, which is a condiment that that poor people used to make in Italy with tuna scraps and aioli, mayonnaise, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you would spread it on top of your veal mayonnaise, and that would be what you ate. And so we said, that would be a great, awesome, cool dish to do. We could do it with pork, something that we can get locally. But there's no tuna in the river around Missoula. Why don't we use trout? We'll use smoked trout.
Right.
We'll make a tonnato out of smoked trout. I've never seen that on a menu before. We're not stealing it from anybody. Like,
right.
That'll be a cool Second Set dish.
And right.
It's really become our signature dish.
Right.
At Second Set. Because it's a truly Second Set dish. I've never seen it in any. Have you ever seen tuna? I mean, you've been eaten all over the world. Have you ever had smoked trout tonnato?
And the only problem with you serving it is I don't like to try anything else because I look forward to coming in and eating just that.
So it's become the quintessential Second Set dish. That'll never come off the menu. That's one of the things that, like, that we're proud of, that we created, and that it was, again, part of that process.
You guys have a couple of signature dishes that have stood the test of time for over the last year. Because I mentioned in the lead-in that you celebrated your first anniversary, was it August 8th?
Yeah.
How do you make the decision to say, hey, this stays versus, you know, this goes? I guess it has to do with supply chain or popularity?
So obviously, like, we have our metrics, and if things aren't selling, we'll take them off.
Right.
Two, seasonality. So, like, the street corn is by far, like, in the summer months, the most popular dish.
Yeah, your chopped liver and peanut butter sandwich didn't quite make it. So.
So we do, it's just our version of Mexican street corn. We just cut it off the cob, and then we have homemade fried pork skin that we fry and put on there.
Yes.
With our house-made aioli and cotija cheese. It's like a Mexican Parmesan is the best way to describe it. It's delicious, and right now it doesn't get any better because the corn's so good. But in a couple weeks, when the corn sucks, like, that dish has to go away.
Right.
Can you buy the corn and freeze it, or just that won't work?
No, I mean, like, so we're working, like, the whole idea here is, like, at the peak of freshness, right?
Right.
Like, you know, we could buy corn from L.A. and have it shipped out, but, like, it just compromises the dish, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? Probably the diners won't know.
But you'll know.
But I know, like, and so it's a quality issue, right? But also, too, there's beautiful things that happen in the fall, right? So we have a plan to replace the corn.
Right.
With something that's going to be awesome.
Right.
But, again, it will be seasonal. So, like, any... In terms of, like, that usually is, like, the first thing that you look to when...
Right.
And then seasonally, too, right? Like, in the wintertime, people don't want to eat a lot of fish.
Right.
For instance, right? Like...
they want heartier dishes.
Well, just, there's not a lot of places that serve fish, like, downtown in the winter, you know? Like,
there's not a lot of places that serve fish even in the summer down there. Right.
Well, especially this year, you know, like, fish is something that's got to be moving to have it on every night. Yeah, like, so we'll do it on the weekends.
The Brussels?
The Brussels sprouts will stay.
They should always stay.
Yeah, those are great.
The Brussels sprouts with fish sauce caramel, which, again, sounds kind of foreign to some of you, but, like, really, like, once you have it, it's just the combination of sweet, salty, and acidic, like, and a little bit of heat from the chilies. But that's a signature, actually, minor saloon dish that I...
Is that right?
Yeah. So we started serving that in Cook City about 10 years ago.
There are at least four places in town I know that do a Brussels sprouts dish that I think we should have a sprout off.
Let's do a
Why don't they have baked beans? That would be...
We got those on Monday with the fried chicken.
Do you?
But you guys wouldn't know that because you haven't been.
I know. Yeah. I can't. I'm not eating that. But
you're not eating fried chicken.
Because I'm on a low-carb diet.
You can take the skin off.
Yeah, but then what's
the
point?
It's not fried chicken. It's not fried chicken. No, but you can come get some baked beans, Arnie.
I can. Well, yeah. I can get some baked beans.
Actually, please, I golf with him. He doesn't eat any baked beans.
So here's the deal, man. Like, here's a little... cook secret for you.
Okay.
If you add a little bicarbonate to your beans,
it won't cause as much gas.
That's right. And also, too, Right.
It's like, and then let's see Blazing Saddles.
Then you'll never be able to put that mute button on the Zoom. That's what you really need it for, don't you?
That's how the decisions are made. And then also, too, it's just the dishes get stagnant, and if they're not moving, then it's time for them to change. So,
Rez, you're very passionate about
food
in the business. But the restaurant business in itself is a tough haul. I've never wanted to be in it. I know people that are in it, and it's their life. They can't even take vacations, you know, to get away from it. How do you balance this enthusiasm for the creativity of the food and the fact that you're open, you know, 6 days a week, you know, and you're in there early, you're out late, you got the staff and dishwasher. I mean, all that stuff that goes into running. To me, it's only a cut above running a B&B, you know, in terms of how much intensity and how much life it sucks out of you.
So for me, I think I was stricken with this, like... my gift, I think, at birth was I understood food. And so for me, like, I think my path was, like, ingrained in me from a young age, right? And so I could do other things, but this is kind of what I understand, I guess, that comes to me easiest. I wouldn't wish restaurant career on anybody. Like, owning a restaurant's... it's difficult. It's challenging.
And in the COVID world, it's even more dicey, for sure. Yeah.
But, like, also, too, when you are the type of person, I guess it's a little narcissistic a little bit because you get to make people feel good, right? And you get that reward.
Feel great.
Well, it's a great name for the bit. Second set. It's like improv music, and you see how the audience reacts to the music.
Yeah.
You're seeing how your audience reacts to the dishes that you've created.
So it can be a drug. I mean, it really can. And I don't mean to like say that in jest, but just seeing the reactions of people, that's what gets you through is when they have that.
Well, once that's in your blood, Jerry Seinfeld is a billionaire.
Yeah.
He still does stand up, you know, at 65 years
right.
old.
He doesn't have
to ever work again. He needs the feedback.
Well, it's affirmation. Yeah. I mean, like you're creating something. And when people appreciate that, it's, I don't know if you guys like go to Vegas much.
Yes.
Have you ever won money there?
Yes.
You know how they make you feel?
Yes.
That's what like cooking a meal that somebody really enjoys is. It's you're out of your mind. It's a fantasy world, you know. Like, and that's maybe like comparing it to winning money in Las Vegas is a bad analogy, but like,
no, it's a high. It's a high.
Yeah, it's a
and
high.
And I'm sure somebody's saying to you, "This sucks." Is a real downer.
It's really not though. Like, because at this point
it's
in my life,
so it's better than winning money.
It's information.
Yeah.
Just like losing the money, if. You know, I gamble. If I lose money, well, that was probably like not the smartest thing, but I'm good with it because this is,
yeah.
I've learned to gamble in that sense.
That is like, where it's a lot like music performance, where yes. an artist who's getting the feedback from the audience, it creates a better performance. It creates, and if they know they have a sour note or the arrangement is not, you know, the crowd's not dancing, right. The crowd's not reacting.
I think a lot of times, like, I bet people have wanted to tell me that they didn't like it, but they just don't know how to, like, or they're intimidated,
right.
You know? And that's okay. And I really like, I don't, if you have constructive.
I think maybe.
Most people, I could be at a table where somebody says, you know, not in your restaurant, but somebody says, this is horrible. And somebody comes over and says, how's the meal?
And they're like, oh, it's great.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
They won't send it back. They won't give criticism. This is overdone. They won't do it.
Well,
they'll complain, but they won't tell the restaurant.
Unless they say, honestly, I need you to tell me how it is because it's a new dish and I'm not sure about it. Now, or it's a new dish. But. You'll know when it's for real, though.
Well, sometimes you don't want to be critical because everybody has a bad
day.
Right.
And people aren't going out to be restaurant critics. And I'm not, like, suggesting that everybody needs to be.
No.
I would say, like, the most of...
Not a fan of
I would say that people... Our biggest complaints is our food. It's right in the line of, like, too much, you know, like... So
spice,
salt.
Yes.
Like, all that stuff, right? Like, but when you're cooking like that, you're gonna ride that edge. Like, and that's why it's so flavorful is because...
Kathy tells you that.
I heard somebody at your restaurant say... Somebody was in there once who said, there's nothing to eat on this menu. And I actually went over and said, well, I don't understand your comment. I overheard your comment. And they said, well, there isn't roast beef. I mean, they were looking... This is a restaurant. It's got to have prime rib. It's got to have roast beef. It's got to have all the normal things, you know.
So,
rack of salmon or whatever.
And so with COVID, that's been an issue. We have people come up and look at the menu all the time. There's nothing here for us. So we ask them, what are you looking for? And in that moment, like, I kind of feel that they feel like we're putting them on the spot. But again, I'm just trying to get information. I'm not, we have a condensed menu right now. It's COVID-19. It's like we can't afford to have a massive menu. Two, we don't believe in a massive menu.
Right.
Like, you just, we're not a diner.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, I should have brought food.
Nah.
But like, I mean, it happens. Like I said, like we're aggressive with our seasoning. We're aggressive with the flavors. And so sometimes people, you know, it's not for them. And so like that would be,
right,
I would
it
say.
Happens.
And it's not even really a complaint in my mind, you know, it just brings to light, like...
But there's some things you shouldn't be willing to do, which I'm sure you're not. I mean, Montana's palate has gotten much more sophisticated than 15 years ago. But I had a friend who had a restaurant down in Hamilton, opened an Italian place called La Trattoria, and they were cooking her family's New York, Brooklyn, Italian grandmother's recipes.
Right.
And they were very proud, like you would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they would serve it, and she told me that almost 50% of the time, people that were eating there asked for ketchup to put on the spaghetti.
So have you guys seen Big Night?
Yeah,
right. That's a lot of parallels to Second Set and Big Night.
Right, Stanley Tucci.
So we're doing this wine dinner the 28th of...
I was going to say, let's take a quick break, and then I want to finish.
Sure.
I want to do our final segment. I want to talk about what's going on.
Right.
Back after this with our guest, Raz Schneider from Second Set Bistro.
Hey, it's Sean Hannity.
We are back with Raz.
Raz Schneider.
Yes.
You started in the beginning, you began to allude to events that you have, and I know you have a whole slew of events coming up. So tell us about it. Get our readers salivating about this.
A couple things, and if you want to check them out here next week on our website, secondsetbistro.com, you can go and look at some of the stuff we're doing. You can also follow us on Instagram. We're posting a lot of stuff on Instagram each day. Well, starting next week, we'll start posting stuff about these events that we have coming up. So the 21st of October, which I believe is a Wednesday.
Yeah.
We're doing a joint dinner with the Rhino. We're doing a mezcal tasting. And so we had done
nice
a back alley bourbon before COVID in the Florence building. It was a 6-course bourbon tasting dinner. So we thought, let's do a back alley mezcal. And so we're going to do that in the lobby of the Florence. It's going to be socially distanced. We're going to limit it to 50. You'll be able to buy pods of tickets, 2s, 4s, 6s, and 8s. Once we reach 50, then we got to cap it because that's all we can do. But it'll be in a safe space. We'll be distanced. We'll have 6 mezcals, and then 5 courses to go along with that mezcal. Mezcal is a very, very complex alcohol, so it goes very, very well with food. There's a lot going on.
And what's that going to be priced at?
$125 a person, which is a really, really, really good deal for the
sure.
the food that we're serving.
And the mezcal.
And the mezcal, yeah. So,
we're going to have to go.
We should all go.
Yeah.
Yes, Arnie, you and I specifically. Yeah.
And then the next week we are partnering with George's Distributing, and we're going to do an Italian vintner's dinner inside Second Set, which is going to be cool. So again, that's going
October 28th.
Perfect. Yeah, and that'll be $100 a person, and that'll be a trip through Italy. And so we were talking about a big night before we took a break.
Yeah, Italy.
And so one of the dishes, if for you listeners, if you've not seen Big Night, I suggest you check it out. It's a great food movie. But at the end of the movie, they're making a big dinner to celebrate the arrival of Louis Prima. And they do this risotto, and it is it's the Italian flag. It's a basil, Parmesan, tomato risotto, red, white, and green. And so we're going to do a riff on that for one of the courses. It's going to be a arancini with stuff with Indugia. I don't know. Do you guys know what Indugia is?
What is it's a sausage?
Yeah, it's a sausage that's soft. It's made with a Calabrian chili. It's got a little bit of spice. It's spreadable, so it's soft.
Nice.
So like when you fry it, like almost becomes like pulled pork texture almost.
Right? Yeah.
So it's got a little bit of heat, salt, some acid there inside like a fried risotto ball with fresh ricotta cheese and then Italian salsa verde. So you got the red, white, and green.
And these events are going to be done where? In the restaurant and in the...
So the wine dinner will be inside of Second Set. Yeah.
Okay.
And then the back alley mezcal will be in the lobby of the Florence building, actually.
Fantastic. And what's the capacity for each event?
50.
50, the first 50.
Yeah, first 50. 50, yeah. Uh-huh.
That's great. So it's well worth
if you haven't experienced these kinds of meals.
And I was at the bourbon, the initial event.
Yeah.
Incredible. It was so much fun, and it was a limited crowd, and the food was outstanding, and the bourbon was flowing. And I have to tell you, it's a great format to showcase your inventive recipes and styles with some great alcohol.
The food's amazing. We've been practicing dishes already. Like we served one last weekend that people went crazy about, the first course for the mezcal dinner.
Okay.
And this is a great story. I'll kind of leave it at that.
Sure.
So a lot of stuff going on in mezcal. A lot of different flavors and deep hits that get your palate like in a ton of different spots. And so we're taking these tasting notes, and everybody kind of came to the consensus that the first round of mezcal had hints of cucumber, had hints of spearmint, had hints of sour apple. So my mind went right away to a raw oyster.
Yeah, that's the great combination.
Kumamoto oyster, because anybody that's had a Kumamoto oyster might have noticed that there's a very vegetal sense to the Kumamoto oyster. It almost tastes like cucumber at the back of your palate. Yeah. And so that's
one of my favorite oysters.
It's a wonderful oyster. So what I did is I was like, well, I'm going to make an agua chile, which in certain parts of Mexico, Baja, they'll make it with cucumber, jalapeno, water, and lime, and that's it. And they put it over shrimp, and it's a dish.
It's almost like ceviche.
So I was like, I'm going to make it with apple and tomatillo because I want that tartness. And apple will go great. And then we'll make a little salad with the cucumber, the apple, and the tomatillo that the oysters will sit on. And then we'll pour that agua chile around the oyster.
Arnie's getting hungry.
And so in that moment, that was the dish was conceptualized. And then it went to plate. last Saturday, and it was amazing. Like, it hit every one of those notes. Like,
that's great. That's perfect.
So we have to say, we have to go in.
Yeah, and
you get have a preview.
We're gonna have to.
We have a preview.
If I die, I die.
Guys, we'll keep you safe.
Yeah, keep you safe.
We'll keep you safe. But that just kind of gives you a little hint into like the process of when we're thinking through a plate. There's a lot that goes on. There's a lot of thought. Yeah. Like I said, we're always trying to match textures and flavors and different temperatures and hot and cold and crunchy. And when you can achieve that and it all's harmonious, then you have a really good dish. And when it hits like that, it's pretty exciting.
Everything's cooking.
Yes. Everything's cooking. In this sense, we're raw dogging it.
Wow. Yeah. He's ready. Our guest was Rad Schneider. He is the owner and partner of Second Set Bistro. He's got two events. Go to secondsetbistro.com to learn more. They are in October 21st and 28th. And be prepared to be delighted.
Exactly.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, it's always a pleasure seeing your ass. Yep. Scott, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.
My name is...